Jambo.
Lessons from the screen, what we mean is we go through different documentaries to tell you what they gon' do. Give you our lessons, give them our blessings. If they trash, we tell you there is no second guessing. Knowledge is power, but time is precious, and we're here to keep you from them lessons. So sit back as we groove, giving you the review, so you only spend time on the docs that you need to.
Welcome to Lessons from the Screen, the show where we give you a review of whether or not anything that you can get through any particular screen of any kind is worth watching. We waste our time, our energy, and our brain power so that you don't have to. You're welcome. Lessons from the Screen is brought to you by PacSync through the Freedom Train Network. You can find us on www.freedomtrainradio.com or on iTunes, Google Play Music, a Stitcher, or anywhere else that you get your podcast. Be sure to head to one of those places and make sure that one of those places is the website, www.freedomtrainradio.com, to leave us a review. And be sure to head to www.pactsinc.org, that's PacSync.org, to show some love and support for our sponsors. PacSync is a black activist and advocacy organization focused on developing the black community through a shift in culture, education, and economics. And as always, Lessons from the Screen is a show given to you from the black perspective. And with that being said, we're going to talk about race, and we're going to talk about racism in every show. And we'll also be looking at some lessons that can be used to improve the community should you choose to do so. During this episode of Lessons from the Screen, we will be taking a look at some of the human rights violations with a special emphasis on immigration. As black people, we should always pay extra close attention to how others are being treated, because we know that what they will do to another group of people, they will do to us. And in this case, they've done it before. In this episode of Lessons from the Screen, we will be paying attention to how immigration looks familiar. 2 years into the Trump administration, and we are seeing everything that we thought we would see, but hoped that we wouldn't. The erasure of Obama-era policies was to be expected, especially considering the relationship between the two men, not just as individuals, but as representatives of two cultures that have historically not gotten along. Although, ironically, interesting, amusingly, however you choose to phrase it, it is interesting that the legacy of Michelle Obama oddly lives on and occasionally makes a guest appearance in the mouth of Melania, the current First Lady. The embracing of white supremacists and their alt-right conspiracies was again expected, especially given Trump's track record for racism and living in controversy. But other things that we are seeing, while we did expect them, we really hoped they would not come to pass, or we at least hoped that some of the other elected officials would be adults and get in the way of them. The disruption of global politics to the level of making friends of enemies and enemies of friends is something that we expected, but really hoped wouldn't happen, and prayed that Congress would intervene if it looked like things were going in that direction. I mean, me and my friends are still trying to figure out, how in the hell do you manage to piss off Canada? How is that even possible? We went from having strong alliances with our neighbors to the north and the south and being relatively safe on our continent to having a very troubled relationship with both of our neighbors to the north and the south, and being best friends with some of the most brutal regimes on the planet. I shouldn't say best friends just yet. There are burgeoning bromances, I'll say that. Changing military standards was something we expected, but hoped wouldn't happen, and has with the introduction of the ban on transgenders. And racism, something we all knew all too well was going to be present, but that we hoped would be kept to its usual undercover, hidden from plain sight form. And it's just reared its head loud and proud above the surface like a cancerous lump protruding even further from the skin of American society. As the moral lies that have been laid over the American foundation of cruelty have been pulled back one layer at a time, we get to the truth of what it means to be an American, a truth that has not changed since the founding of this nation. To be an American is to be white, first and foremost, and with the utmost importance. As comments about shithole countries filled with brown and black people fly out of the White House, immigration policy changes have begun to take effect. We spoke in a previous episode about immigration changes targeted at preventing immigration from African countries. Now the Trump administration has begun a mandatory policy of separating children from parents at the border as a deterrent to keep people from trying to cross. And to make matters worse, they are losing chunks of the kids in the process. In addition to that, they have immigration agents stationed ahead of checkpoints, preventing people from reaching U.S. soil and claiming asylum. Of course, these are almost always brown or black people. Immigration has become a real-world issue in these modern times of supposed openness and world-shrinking technology. And the most dangerous aspect of these talks about immigration are the seemingly endless levels of apathy that Americans can generate towards what is happening under the guise of protecting borders and extreme nationalistic ideology. And the idea prevails that white American ancestors migrated here legally, learned the language, and overcame the barriers to in order to build the life enjoyed by their descendants, regardless of how the context and complexities of the current situation make that an unbalanced and unfair comparison. For starters, look, many of those Central and South American people that white people would love to keep out of America are the descendants of those same brown people that white people killed when they came and took the land for themselves without following the proper Native American protocols for establishing a relationship or following established customs and courtesies. And while some may say it's stupid to go back that far, I say it's relevant because America was built on a series of foundational sins. And immigration continues to build layer upon layer on one of them. But of course, the argument could still be made that the natives didn't have an immigration system or even they weren't even a recognized nation. And while we could debate both of those points, and believe you me, I could, that would be getting into a bit of minutia, not to say that it's not important, just to say that it's a discussion that we can save for another day. Although I will say that people should research the Mexican-American War and just check it out to see how white Americans have routinely taken land that they wanted without regard for others, even after the founding of America. You see, prior to 1882, there was no federal immigration law. Depending on where someone landed, they could get off the boat, get a job, find shelter, and start a life without anyone caring that they didn't know the language, and it was perfectly normal to not have any sort of identification papers. In 1882, they created the first federal immigration law, but it was largely to restrict Chinese immigrants who white people felt were a threat to them in terms of labor and health. In 1924, quotas were implemented with all Asian nations, with the exception of Japan and the Philippines, being barred from entry. The Philippines was a U.S. colony, and thus Filipinos were considered United States citizens. And Japan had agreed to limit immigration on their end in what was the Gentlemen Agreement. There were also no quotas of any kind for people coming from the Western Hemisphere. These quotas were in relation to the number of foreign-born people presently in the country, and with a large portion of immigrants being from Britain and other Western European countries and Northern European countries, the quota for immigrants from these countries was much higher than it was for people from other countries with less people currently in the United States. It also allowed for the exclusion of entry to any alien who was by race or nationality ineligible for citizenship, meaning that even though Japan was not on the Asian bar zone, was not a part of that group that was barred, the Asians that were barred from entering the country, they were, by virtue of still being Asians, still not allowed into the country, and this was a violation of the previously mentioned Gentlemen's Agreement with Japan. So in 1882, our first federal immigration policy comes, which is solely to stop Chinese. And then in 1924, quotas were implemented and all Asian nations were barred from entry into the United States, with the exception of the Philippines, which was still a U.S. colony. It wasn't until 1965 that modern immigration began to take shape. So for most of these people talking about their ancestors overcoming challenges, it is completely dishonest to make the comparison. The challenges their ancestors faced weren't anything like what we see now. And for many of them, their ancestors were assisted in the transition. We see many people talking about following the law and even about how God ordained that we follow the law. And this is especially troubling when it comes from black people. And it should be troubling when any black person hears religion being used to support obedience to the law, because we should know better. Slavery was at one point the law of the land in the United States. Racism was at one point codified in the law and still is codified in the culture and a lot of the policies. This idea that laws are just and must be followed is at its core complete idiocy. The mere fact that they would use the Bible to justify corrupt laws should, again, as I said earlier, make every black person in America cringe, as even the most ignorant of us should know that the same tactic was used during slavery to keep slaves in check. Slave pastors were largely forced to tell their congregations that God had ordained their masters to be master over them, and that disobeying their masters was disobeying God. And right underneath Romans 13, 1 through 7, you get Romans 13, 1, 8 through 10. Now, 1 through 7 is the passage they love to quote, talking about how the law is just and God ordained the authorities above you and this, that, and the third. But the very next two verses says that the only law that we should obey is to love each other. Now, I don't know about you, but it seems to me that enslaving somebody, stealing them from their home, violating their family, their culture, separating them from their family, their culture, even if those are laws, those don't seem to be keeping with that one law in 8 through 10 that says that we should love each other. And see, I'm not a Bible thumper. I'm not. But it does seem to me that if you're going to use the Bible, you should take in the entire context of what it's saying. And to another point, we see just as many people ignoring the role of the U.S. in creating these environments of asylum seekers and fleeing immigrants to the U.S. from Central and South America in the first place. You see, most of these people are coming from places that have United States handprints all over them. We see just as many people from El Salvador, just as many people from Guatemala, and just as many people from Nicaragua. To the point of our handprints being all over them, in 1980, El Salvador began its civil war that lasted until 1992. During this time, the Salvadorian people were massacred by a U.S.-backed government. The U.S. government spent over $6 billion on military assistance to that regime. We also can't forget about the Contra situation in Nicaragua, which many believe the CIA flooded black communities here in America with crack to drum up finances to send to Nicaragua. The U.S. continues to have a military presence in the region and have done next to nothing to maintain stability. In Guatemala, the U.S. helped overthrow the democratically elected government in 1954, which destabilized that country arguably for the next 50 years. We have a long history outside of just these incidents of intervening in these countries' affairs, overthrowing democratically elected governments, and arming repressive regimes and rebel forces. These actions have the direct effect of destabilizing the region and causing people to flee. And what better place to come to than the land of opportunity, the wealthiest nation in the history of the world? Your propaganda works. Everybody wants to come. Unfortunately, when they get here under the Trump administration, they are faced with a new policy that has no law backing it, despite what Trump and his aides say, that strips children from parents, brothers from sisters, and warehouses them as a punishment for seeking a better life than the one that they feel is disastrous in their home country, and that behind the scenes has American handprints all over it. If they are seeking asylum, which is considered a human right, they are met before they can get onto American soil by Border Patrol agents telling them now isn't a good time. Turn around and try again later. I imagine it's even more inconvenient for these people to pack up and flee for their lives than it is for the U.S. to process a bit of extra paperwork. But, you know, that's just me. Even the fact that what qualifies for asylum has been narrowed should cause us alarm. If any person is afraid that they will be killed if they return to their home country, they deserve some aid, even if it's just sending them somewhere else that can take them in. But let's get back to these kids for a minute. These kids being ripped from their parents and forced into unknown environments, some not even a year old, stripped from everyone that they know and not allowed to be touched, because the policies at many of these facilities is that you can't touch the kids to comfort them, meaning no hugs, no holding, no physical contact except to restrain them. Think about a 2-year-old that is crying their eyes out and is left to cry endlessly because no one can touch the child to console them out of fear of losing their job. And some of these kids come up missing at that. And they are held indefinitely. Kids being used as a political weapon or a criminal deterrent should cross every human rights line available. But it is happening. And it has been happening since March as a pilot program and since May as official national policy. And in the 6 weeks that it has been in the books, more than 2,000 children have been separated from their parents. Now, this will scar a number of them for life. And we may very well be creating the next generation of people that can't wait to inflict harm on Americans and America. Not only is it depriving children of their parents, but it deprives them of physical touch during moments of heightened stress. Now, for those of you that don't know, humans are extremely social creatures. Children need physical contact, especially during moments of social, emotional, during these moments of heightened stress. They need physical contact. If you deny a baby any social outlets or physical contact, it will die. They need physical contact during these moments for social, emotional, and mental development and well-being. And depriving them of that alters the way that they will grow and develop in a negative manner, and that is paramount to government-sanctioned, endorsed, and ordered child abuse. One of the many human rights violations we have seen during the Trump administration's term. So it should come as no surprise to all of us that the administration is talking about pulling out of the UN Human Rights Council, and we should be looking to see if the U.S. pulls out of the UN altogether. When looking at other shows that I've done regarding Israel, the Palestinians, as well as the general friction between the Trump administration and the UN because they won't hail Hitler the way he wants them to, it should really come as no surprise. And it would score him major points in his political base and the alt-right, right-wing, white supremacist, white nationalist, whatever you want to call them, conspiracy theorists that reside there. Just as it should come as no surprise that the Trump administration is blaming everything on Obama, as well as endorsing openly racist and white supremacist candidates for elected positions. The pictures of children in cages was from 2014 while Obama was in office. Let's clear that up. But we also saw the amount of unaccompanied minors crossing the borders to get to family on this side rise from 38,000 in 2013 to 68,000 in 2014. That rise was a surprise and caused officials to scramble to figure out what to do with these kids until they could process them and find a guardian to look after them. That is distinctly different from this new age Trump policy of declaring all children to be unaccompanied minors, even if they are holding their parents' hands and being separated from their parents and then divided further by gender, potentially separating them from siblings. He has mandated inhumane treatment, and black folks should be extremely concerned. Not just that he has mandated it, but that Congress isn't doing anything to stop it, and that other people are actually carrying out the orders. We should be extremely concerned that he has so many people believing that there is a law behind it when there isn't. And we should be extremely concerned that he has so many people believing that this was started under a previous administration when it wasn't. And we have the tapes of his Attorney General Jeff Sessions making the announcement for this new policy last month. And we have the tapes of him talking about the new direction. And despite all that, he still has people believing that the black man did it. This should remind us that America has historically never had a problem separating families, nor using children as tools. America has never had that problem. During slavery, children were often used to keep parents in check, and selling them was punishment in some cases. After slavery, threats towards children were often used to keep communities in line, and the children were often targeted for peonage as a precursor to the prison industrial complex. And this is where you hear stories about white people being able to say, give me your papers, let me see your papers. And if you couldn't produce papers of, and this was after slavery, if you couldn't, so we're not talking about ownership papers or your past to be out away from the plantation. We're talking about papers showing that you were employed. If you couldn't produce these employment papers, they would take you to the court and basically sell you into peonage, debt slavery, children. So we shouldn't be surprised. Peonage was the precursor for the prison industrial complex. You should definitely look that up. Throughout the entirety of American history, we see white Americans willing to utilize children as tools. This has to be pointed out because many continue to say that America is different and has changed, despite constant and reoccurring themes that suggest otherwise. That suggested there has been no change, or very little change, or very little meaningful change. This means that we should take greater care to protect and educate and provide for our own communities and especially our children. Removing our ability to reproduce was utilized as recently as the 70s and 80s when people were being sterilized without their knowledge. And children are truly our most precious commodities. We should also take note of the timeline. I did a show not too long ago on the BIE, the Black Identity Extremist Report, that essentially told cops to look into anyone displaying cultural black pride. Combine that with the bold policies that are in place and a blatant and open disregard for human rights, and you have a situation ripe for open and extreme abuses to the black community of a nature worse than what we have seen so far with regards to the blatancy of it. We know we've seen it all, but over the past few years, there has been this thing to kind of minimize it, to kind of keep it under the surface. It's about to go back to what we've seen before if we don't do something, if something doesn't happen. We can no longer say that this isn't possible and that this stuff can't happen, because the past 2 years have been filled with things that weren't supposed to be possible, that supposedly could not happen. We should also take this time to seriously get educated on politics, because we can clearly see that the current political actors aren't terribly interested in moving until they are pushed. This policy has been in effect since March as a pilot and since May as a national official policy. And while it is a hot button issue now, it still has not been fixed. The only reason it is a focus politically is because of the political fallout when people started hearing the children crying and the story started getting out. And because Donald Trump is not very popular. We need to begin to truly understand the game of politics, and we need to play it on all levels of government, both out in the open and behind the scenes. The fact that people honestly think nothing can be done because the president won't sign any bill into law should be alarming to all of us, as a most basic component of checks and balances in Congress between the legislative branch and the executive branch is Congress's ability to override a veto with a 2/3 vote. And the fact that if the president doesn't sign and doesn't veto, the bill becomes law anyway. Beyond that, we simply need to pay more attention and really begin community planning. We need to take it seriously. Pay attention to what you're seeing and stop thinking that it can't happen. It is imperative. As the U.S. pulls out of all agreements and makes friends with regimes that are okay with committing human rights violations, we should be especially concerned given our history in America and what America has been willing to do to us.
Lessons from the screen, what we mean is we go through different documentaries to tell you what they gon' do. Give you our lessons, give them our blessings. If they trash, we tell you there is no second guessing. Knowledge is power, but time is precious. And we're here to keep you from them lessons. So sit back as we groove, giving you the review, so you only spend time on the docs that you need to.